Good morning. You are listening to the KRFY Morning Show right here on 88.5 Panhandle Community Radio. I am Lonesome Jack in the studio this January 7th of 2016. And no live guest this morning because instead we have a just recently recorded interview just a few hours ago with Keith Lee Morris. He's an author with a new book that's just out about 36 hours ago, a new book called Traveler's Rest. It's a novel set in the Idaho Panhandle, and he will be here in Sandpoint, Idaho on January 15th. He's doing a reading at the Burned Barrel on January 15th. You will not want to miss it. And right now, why don't we turn it over to him? Thanks for tuning into the KRFY Morning Show. Keith Lee Morris talking to me from South Carolina about his new novel, Traveler's Rest. Keith Lee Morris, thanks for talking to me today.
Thanks for calling me up.
Or tonight, I should say. This is
Yeah, late here, right.
Yeah, we're recording it.
The midnight interview.
You're in South Carolina, so it's a... This is going to have more of a... Yeah, like a late night radio feel than a morning show feel. But
there you go.
Our listeners
I'll try not to fall asleep during the middle of it.
Thank you.
Okay.
Let's talk about your latest book. It's called Traveler's Rest, and... How do you describe it when people ask?
It's been strange because to me, really, I wasn't doing anything a whole lot different with this book than I typically do. I've been writing short stories based on dreams for about 20 years now, really. And literally taking like a piece of a dream that I'll have and then trying to sort of work a narrative out of it somehow. And so this was just kind of my first attempt to actually take that same mode and work it into an entire novel. And so that's really all I had in mind the whole time I was doing it. And then, you know, since it's come out or since it's been getting reviewed, it's all of a sudden being, it's been reviewed as a horror novel or sci-fi or fantasy or suspense or a thriller or something. I just kind of thought of it as a regular novel that borrowed elements from ghost stories, haunted house tales, that kind of thing, but was really more of this kind of dream narrative that I typically write.
So
I'm gonna call it a dream story.
That's interesting, and I can definitely pick up on that. I've been reading it. So the book takes place shortly after New Year's in a small town in Idaho, and I was basically reading it shortly after New Year's in a small town in Idaho, and
yeah,
and I was
came
very
out shortly after New Year's.
Yeah, and I was pretty, I was feeling a little tripped out by it. I have been so far. I feel like I've stepped into a dream a little bit. I can see that connection. You've really messed up my sleep and everything for these last couple days.
I didn't mean
days.
To do that. It's funny, but that's the other thing I kind of wasn't really anticipating is, when you're writing it yourself, I mean, you're aware that you're trying to create a sense of suspense and that it's kind of, the atmosphere is eerie and strange, but if you're writing it yourself, you're not really scaring yourself to death. You know what I mean? It's not really. So when other people would come back and say, "Oh, wow, it was really scary," I'm like, "Oh, well, okay, it wasn't for me. I guess I was writing it, so it wasn't quite that way."
Yeah. Well, I'm not a literary critic or anything, so I don't have a huge background in it. But I think it is spooky and scary, but it's not violent or terrifying exactly.
That's why I don't kind of get the horror novel comparison in a way. Is I think, well, wait a second, isn't a horror novel by definition sort of horrifying? Doesn't that involve blood and and it doesn't really have any of those kind of traditional horror elements. It does have elements of, I think, ghost stories and haunted house stories.
Yeah.
And that kind of thing. But really it's a character-based novel. It's about the characters more than anything else.
I was reminded of I took a few notes. I was reminded of one is Edgar Allan Poe
if anything. Not in like the...
There you go.
You know, not sentence to sentence. It's not written in the same style, but it is as far as picking up that mood, where it's not an axe murder uh-huh. or anything, but there is some little spooky going on. And then,
sure, yeah, I'm happy with that one. Sure.
And of all things, and maybe just because I just read it 2 weeks ago, but A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens.
Yeah.
Where it is.
Yeah.
It's definitely a character-driven work, but the fuel there comes from something spooky. The fuel in the engine is...
Yeah, I think that's interesting because that, you know, here we kind of think of A Christmas Carol as being, I don't know, almost like a fairy tale or something. It's this happy kind of Christmas story. But, I mean, it was really written as a ghost story by Dickens. And, mm-hmm. you know, there was a craze for ghost stories in the Victorian era around that time. And he was writing that novel to capitalize on this trend in a way. So it was seen more, I mean, it was seen as a legitimate kind of, you know, spooky, scary ghost story in a way at that time. And it's interesting that, you know, the book is being published in the UK simultaneously with the US publication and with the publishers in England. That's kind of what they connect it to, you know, and the newspapers in England, the coverage that's been done so far, that's sort of how they see it, is fitting in that tradition, you know? So yeah, you're right there. Yeah, definitely.
So how do you classify it? You kind of told it as a dream story, but do you see it as part of a particular like literary tradition, or what are your inspirations?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like I say, for me, it's not different from what I've been doing for a long time, really. It's just that I've always done it with short stories before. And I think that people who have, you know, people who've read my short stories, I write two different kinds. I mean, a lot of them are sort of regular realism. A lot of them take place in Sandpoint, you know? And then these other ones are sort of more weird and ethereal and otherworldly and dreamlike. And to me, I'm just, you know, it's just the same thing that I've been doing. So I really wasn't thinking of it that way. I don't know what I would classify it as, you know, just regular old book.
Hmm.
I don't see it as fitting in a particular kind of genre, I guess.
Yeah. So it takes place in a town called Goodnight, Idaho. And is that, you just mentioned that, what is your connection to Idaho? And do you take inspiration for Goodnight from any particular town up here?
Well, I this one, you know, most of my stuff is set in Sandpoint, really. Even after years and years of being away from Sandpoint, I still think of Sandpoint as home. And, you know, sometimes people ask me, why aren't you writing about South Carolina? It's like, I don't know. I don't feel like I know South Carolina as well as I know Sandpoint. Yeah. And when I start thinking of a story, it's almost, Sandpoint's almost the default setting, you know, like in my head, it will happen in Sandpoint unless something happens that makes me move it somewhere else. So in this case, I spent, before we moved to Sandpoint, my father was a football coach down in Kellogg, and we lived down there at the time of the, you'd be way too young to remember this, but the Sunshine Mine disaster, which was in 1972, and I was a little kid at that time, and it was like a horrific thing. There in Silver Valley were 90 miners that were killed in that mine accident, and a lot of them were people that, you know, you knew because they were your friends' parents, you know. And that area always had kind of a strange feel to me after we moved away. And they're odd towns too down there. And so I was there visiting a friend of mine, Chase Sanborn, who's also from Sandpoint and who owns a brewery, a microbrewery in Wallace now. And we were down there visiting the brewery, and another friend of ours had keys to this old abandoned hotel that was being restored down there, and took us in this place late at night. And that's kind of when I really started getting the feel for the novel. It was going to be set someplace else before that. So then it started to seem like Wallace, Idaho to me, but it's not really Wallace, because, you know, you've read enough of the book to see. I mean, the town is really creepy and the people are weird, and I didn't want people to think that about Wallace. So I invented a town called Goodnight, and sort of, you know, it's a highly fictionalized version of a small town in the Silver Valley, I guess would be the best way to put it.
Yeah. I'm I was going to mention Wallace was, I haven't been everywhere, but that was the place. At first I thought, oh, it's like, it feels just like Sandpoint. And then I was like, no, it's smaller than Sandpoint. This feels like it, it, I was feeling like Wallace, where it is sort of a,
right,
because Sandpoint's a little bit touristy and Wallace is, it has that to it, but Wallace is more of a, yeah, little bit of a ghost town.
Well, and I also, you know, in my imagination, it was kind of like, just reduce it to one street, not even one street, but almost just a block. You know, you really don't see anything outside of that one block almost that the hotel is on and the diner and the bar, and that pretty much serves as the setting, other than, you know, when they try to sort of venture out from that area and get lost, pretty, you know. So yeah, it was really kind of just narrowing it down as much as possible and making it, kind of keeping it as tight as I could.
Is it a autobiographical novel? I guess we could back up and we could ask what's your day job, because that sort of,
well, my day job, I am a professor, but not an anthropology professor. The inspiration for the main character, well, I mean, I don't really think there is a main character. You know, you got four main characters, all the different family members, but the father, really my inspiration for him as a character was from an anthropology professor I had in college at the University of Idaho, and I won't say who. I don't know if he's still around, but that was kind of who I envisioned. And no, I don't, you know, I mean, different. Robbie, the character Robbie in there is a kind of character I've written a good bit before, and he would have fit in really well in either of my other novels. You know, he could have walked right into my last novel, Dart League King, and fit right in. So I was used to writing that kind of character. I try not to write characters that actually seem to me, at least, like myself, because that starts to inhibit me in the writing, you know? Mm-hmm. I teach creative writing, and so, I mean, I teach my students that a lot too, is, you know, we all find ourselves fascinating and interesting, and if you start actually trying to write about yourself, then you just kind of assume everybody else is interested in the character the same way you are, and you fail to get what's actually interesting down on the page. So I try to think of the characters as people that I'm coming up with in my imagination, although they do a lot of times have characteristics and traits and certain personality things that have to do with friends, family, you know, sometimes even myself. You're going to pick up the cat here on the recording. The cat just burst into the room. Sorry about that.
That's
okay,
all right.
Okay, Radio Land, putting the cat back out. There we go. All right, go ahead.
This is, by the way, we're talking to Keith Lee Morris. You're listening to 88.5 KRFY. And as you can hear, he is not in the studio with me. He's calling in from South Carolina right now. Talking about the book Traveler's Rest, which is, well, when does this officially drop? When does it come out?
Actually, yesterday. Yesterday. Yep. So it's been out for a full 24 hours now.
Okay. It's out. One of the things that that really struck me is it's not a first person novel. It's written in the third person, but the tone or the voice, you're the professor, not me, but I guess I'd call it the tone, changes depending on which character is in focus. And it's,
right.
That was really impressive to me how it's, it's all written as from the third person, but you can definitely tell when you're writing about the 10-year-old boy versus when it's the 30-year-old addict and drifter character, or the professor,
right,
or
yeah,
the housewife.
That's definitely something I'm trying to do. And actually, that's something that I did in my last novel as well. And so it was kind of, this is a much different novel. I think the characters are much different. The situation is completely different. But I borrowed that. Yeah, I definitely borrowed that technique as a way to tell the story. And you're right. I mean, I think it's interesting because, you know, people come back to me later and say, they think the book was actually written in first person. And, you know, because it seems that way. I mean, it even seems that way to me sometimes. And you kind of forget that it's like, oh, wait, it's what you'd call like a very close third person.
Mm. Was it, I guess as a writer, how do you get into the, do you have any particular techniques to like get into the heads of the 10-year-old versus a 30-year-old or what's, wow. you know, well, when you're sitting kids, down. Yeah, go ahead.
Having kids helps, you know, having raised two boys that went through the 10-year-old phase, that certainly helps. Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, there's something about writing that's like method acting in a way. You know, you have to, when you're writing those parts, you kind of have to get in the heads of those characters. And that can be pretty tough sometimes and sometimes sort of unpleasant. But I think, you know, any time to, you have to be able to, yeah, you have to be able to at least understand how these other people think in order to be able to get them down on paper. So you are sort of channeling the characters in a way. I don't have any particular way that I try to do it. I mean, sometimes music will get me in a certain mood. I know I have to be in a certain kind of mood to write a certain character or write a certain scene based on what's going to happen. And I'll try listening to some particular kind of music, or I might do it at a different time of day or a different location. You know, but I don't have any tried and true formula, I guess.
So it does bounce back and, or the kind of the focus, the main character at any given point bounces back and forth. I'm just curious, did you sit down and write, did you write it pretty much as it's presented, or did you write it like, did you write all
That's a good
of
question.
The, her scenes first and then his scenes uh-huh. later, or yeah, what, how'd you do that?
That's a good question. Yeah, I mean, I tend to work straight through pretty much, or I try to usually. The first two chapters, actually, in the novel were not there in the original draft. And I guess maybe the last chapter was, but I didn't really know what the last chapter was going to be for a long time. So I worked pretty much straight through, and then a lot of the chapters, there was, you know, chapters got moved around a good bit. I mean, that came in the editing process. You're working with an editor, and you got a different set of eyes on the manuscript. You know, somebody, I mean, which really helps. You know, you get somebody who's not stuck in your own head looking at it, and they've got a little bit of a different perspective and can tell you what they're seeing instead of just what you've locked onto. And so a lot of the chapters were moved around, and then the first two chapters were actually added after the fact. But for the most part, it went straight through.
That's what's the process like for you as a writer? What do you, when do you find the time?
Painful. Yeah. Painful. I'm not one of those people who really likes to write a lot. I'm starting to like it a little better these days, but I've always said, and this is like literally true, like I don't like sitting down to write. It's hard work, you know. I think people who really tried to do it seriously, it's just you get done and you're tired. It's just mentally tiring. I like to run, and you know, so I run long distances, but I don't really know which is more tiring, really. It's a close call. But I mean, I have literally gone out and mowed the lawn in order to keep from writing something, you know? I mean, in order as a means of procrastinating, I have actually used lawn mowing as a preferable alternative to sitting down and working on something that I know is going to be difficult. So I'm not one of those. I mean, I know writers who I envy them too. They just can't wait to get up in the morning and, you know, sit down at the computer or with a pen and paper in hand and get going. And I kind of dread it. But then once I get into a plot further, this starts coming more naturally. I write longhand most of the time, first draft, but I will do some stuff on the computer now. I used not to do that. Again, I don't have any particular, you know, I don't have a routine. A lot of writers have a routine. I don't really have one.
But you do mostly longhand. Do you do it in the home or out and about, or where do you go?
Well, I can do a lot at home now. When my kids were younger, no, there was no way, you know. So I mean, I used to go to my office. I used to write at my office on campus. I teach at Clemson University. I used to sit outside on campus a lot of times. And then I also used to write in bars. I still will every once in a while, not too often. But I actually, you know, there's one of the local bars here in Clemson has a plaque for my first novel, you know, for like the booth that I was sitting in writing the whole novel, because the owner, finally, he'd seen me in there working on it so much, and we were friends, and he said, if you ever get that thing published, I'm going to put a plaque up. And so when I actually had the book, I kind of dropped it in his lap and said, all right, where's my plaque? And he came through. So I'll work in different places. Now I mostly work at home, usually in the mornings with a couple cups of coffee.
That's nice. There's a bar in Missoula, not far from here, that has a chair with a little plaque and a photo next to it, where James Crumley, I think, wrote a lot. I don't know if they put it up after he died or what, but I know the bar. Memorial.
It's good to have something in a bar named after you. That's how I feel. You know? So, I'm happy with that.
What do you find yourself reading? What's your favorite thing to?
Oh, that's good. I love old novels. I always, you know, that was kind of what was, that was one thing that was fun about this book, was because I did feel kind of, I was just like, I was channeling, you know, these 19th century long Victorian novels in a way, but in parts of it, you know, but, I like, you know, I'm contemporary novels. I'm a huge fan of Cormac McCarthy. I'm trying to think of even, you know, I just read the Elena Ferrante, the first volume of the Elena Ferrante novel that everybody seems to be reading now. I read a lot of different stuff. I really love, another standpoint writer, Marilynne Robinson. I mean, she comes out with a lot of books now, but, I think a lot of people in Sandpoint don't even know that, but that's one of the greatest American novels of the 20th century, really, that was written about Sandpoint. She lived there when she was a girl, housekeeping. Love that book. That's one of my favorites. But I read the same stuff most other people read. I mean, I love the Pulitzer winners. I mean, the Pulitzer Prize Committee's actually gotten it right the last few years, I think. You can go back. I loved Anthony Doerr's All the Light We Cannot See last year. He's an Idaho writer as well. He lives down in Boise. Jennifer Egan's A Visit from the Goon Squad. Adam Johnson, The Orphan Master's Son. I like all those books. Those are recent Pulitzer winners. The Goldfinch by Donna Tartt, I think, was an amazing novel. Won the Pulitzer a couple of years ago.
Man, these are all I've heard of most of these titles, but I must confess I haven't read them. I'm a slow reader, and it's hard to commit to, I don't know, to new fiction in particular. But I'll take those recommendations to heart.
The Goldfinch is about 800 pages, so you might want to steer away from that one.
What about Mr. Proust?
I was reading Proust the whole time. I don't know if you're familiar with his Remembrance of Things Past, which is generally considered to be the longest novel ever written. Yeah. And it's also, not only is it really long, but it's also really dense. I mean, everything from the imagery to the sentence structures to the characters to everything. And so it takes a long, long time to read. And I was reading it, all, what, seven volumes of it, while I was working on the novel. So it kind of started leaking in, you know. I mean, you sort of absorb what you read, and it starts... Yeah, I think that's why writers, you have to be a little bit, I was just talking about that. I was at an event last night and talking to a writer about that, about you have to be careful about what it is that you're reading while you're trying to write something. If you start reading a whole bunch of different kinds of stuff, then your own writing can start to feel really schizophrenic. So I was reading Proust, and I think it just kind of naturally started seeping in. And so when I started looking for epigraphs, that was where I went. And so I had that one at the beginning where it had the Proust quote. And then it just sort of, the other ones fell into place as I was going along. And I think the book has a lot of the same kind of, especially thematically, there's a lot of the same concerns that are in that book. There's a lot of stuff about family, memory, dreams, solitude, the passage of time, the way we remember things. And there's a lot of that in this book too, I think.
Well, I haven't finished it yet. I'm still working on your book, because, like I said, I'm a slow reader, but I am into it enough to be it's an interesting, it's like a page turner, but not in the traditional sense. Cause like I said, there's no one running around. There's no bomb ticking. There's no one running around with a gun or an axe or anything, but it moves easily. It's an accessibly written, I guess you would say, but it's also, it does have literary aspects to it as well.
Good. I'm glad you feel that way, because that's definitely one thing you worry about when you're not writing stuff that has, you know, axe murderers and car chases and things, because it's you feel like, you know, it's like, well, there's not really so much happening here. People are talking. There's a conversation. People are thinking about things. And I mean, I'm probably making it sound like the most boring book in the history of the world, but I mean, things do happen. It's just that they're not, it's not going 100 miles an hour every page. So,
yeah. Was there any kind of trigger or aha moment or anything? What made you want to sit down and write this book?
Well, that's like I say, I had started on it. I mean, I had an idea that was similar, but it was really that, it was kind of that visit to Wallace and going in that band, you know, that old hotel there, that sort of kicked it into gear. And then later on I got stuck. You know, I got about 75, 80 pages into it. Suddenly it just would not budge, you know, and I had taken a sabbatical. I was on, so in other words, I was off work at Clemson. They gave me a semester just to work on the book, and I'm sitting here doing nothing every day and thinking, oh wow, I'm gonna fire me. And then all of a sudden, what happened was the part that I hadn't figured out before and that suddenly kind of clicked was when I realized that the book was actually going to go back into the past. Like I knew there was this connection to the past, but I didn't realize that I was actually going to write part of it in the past. And so when that clicked in, then it really started moving again. So I guess if there was an aha moment, that was it.
Mm-hmm. The book takes place in the present day, but it does have a
That's a spoiler alert, because you haven't gotten to that part yet, probably.
No,
haven't gotten to that part.
I've gotten to at least the first of those of that part. Uh-huh. And it is sort of a, it reminds me of a movie or something, but it's sort of a spine-tingling sensation, not in a scary way, but in a, I don't know. It was like... I could make a couple geeky references to what it made me feel like, but it did sort of make me shiver a little bit.
Yeah. Spine tingling, that's good. Spine tingling's good. I'll take that.
Mm-hmm. Well, good. sort of, it all comes full circle, or there's more going on here than at first we thought, I guess, is what...
Right. Well, and, you know, that I think it's, hopefully it's getting to that point in the book where, that's really hard. That's one of the hard things to figure out as a writer, I think, is, well, you know, how far can you go along with what you're doing before you have to start doing something different or lose the reader, you know? Mm. The reader's going to get tired if it's just the same old thing over and over and over again. So definitely at around that point. In fact, I probably stretched it a little too far. But, you know, I probably tried the reader's patience a little too much. But at that point, it did feel like, okay, something there's got to be some new element here. Something new has to start happening. And so that's what that's what it was.
Mm. What is your, what's the Sandpoint connection for you? I know
I grew up in Sandpoint. Sandpoint's, both of my parents taught at, what used to be Stidwell Junior High School. I guess Stidwell Junior High School is still there, right?
I don't know.
I think Stidwell's. I think Stidwell is still the junior high, and I think it's still in the same place. And then I went to Sandpoint High School, and still have relationships with the teachers there. Marianne Love, who was a high school English teacher there for many, many years, she'll be introducing me, I think, at my reading in Sandpoint on the 15th. A lot of my best friends still in the area. A lot of people that I went to school with in Sandpoint who have moved away. Most of them are still kind of at least in the general vicinity. But we get together every time I come up there. I try to come up at least once a year. It doesn't always work, but I usually come up in the summer and hang out, and it's always fun. I lived there from the time I was 12 until off and on. Off and on until I was 30, I would keep moving back and then moving away and doing something different and then coming back. And I met my wife there. I used to work at what is now Eichhardt's. I bartended back in this. There was a brief period where it was called Locals. This is after everybody remembers it as a Donkey Jaw, but there was a brief period when it was called Locals, and I was a bartender at Locals. And my wife was a waitress. That's where I met her. And my oldest son was born in Sandpoint in 1992. So Sandpoint, really, I mean, we've been in South Carolina for a long time, but Sandpoint is still home to me.
Nice. I'm glad you listed off some specifics, because people are probably going to now go, oh, I know that voice, or something like that. Oh, that's where I know this guy from.
Yeah, I served him a beer at Locals 20 yeah. years ago, so.
There you go. Well, people have strange memories. They might know you. You just said that Marianne Love is introducing you. When and where is the reading?
It is at the Burned Barrel.
Oh, great.
Which is new to me. That's a new place there. And that's on First Avenue, right?
That's right.
And it is on the 15th. I should have checked this before I got in the middle of the interview. I think I want to say 6 or 6:30, but it's on the Sandpoint calendar on Sandpoint Online, and I think it's being advertised in some other places. So hopefully it shouldn't be too hard to find it. But it's either 6 or 6:30 on the 15th at the Burned Barrel.
Cool. Yeah, the Burned Barrel it was formerly known as the Coldwater Creek Wine Bar.
Right.
And it is
right.
Yeah, upstairs and about the middle of the street on First Avenue. You'll be reading from Traveler's Rest?
Yeah. Yes.
Cool.
Doing a book signing, and then then hopefully it'll be a lot of friends there and maybe some new friends there too, and hang out afterward,
Yeah. So that's when people can see you and where. Is there anything else you wanna plug before we sign off for the evening or the morning, depending?
No, I think we covered it all pretty well. I think thanks a lot. And yep, we've gone past midnight now, so we accomplished that.
The book is called Traveler's Rest. I am not fully done with it yet, but what I've read so far is wonderful, and I can give it my full recommendation. And the author is Keith Lee Morris. He's reading at the Burned Barrel on, it sounds like he's reading on the 15th in the evening, and we'll get those details right before showtime. Thanks for joining me on the
thank you,
show.
Jack.
Yeah. Anything.
Appreciate it. Hope to see you next week, maybe.
Yeah, I hope to be there.
All right,
great. What's next for you?
I don't know. This is, I'll get done with this, and then I'll do a swing up in the Northeast, New York and Boston, and Portland, Maine, actually. And then I think a lot of places down here in the Southeast. And then hopefully take a long rest and then get to work on another book, maybe.
Cool. Well, maybe we'll hear from you when that next one comes out. And
okay.
Until then, thanks for talking, and that's it. We now return to the KR4M Morning Show.
All right, thanks a lot, Jack.
Thanks for listening to the KRFY Morning Show. For copyright reasons, we can't reproduce protected music on the podcast edition of The Morning Show. But feel free to tune in live at 8 a.m. at 88.5 on your radio dial, or listen anywhere in the world by streaming us through our website, krfy.org. If you listen live, you can hear the full program, including musical breaks. While you're visiting KRFY.org, consider tapping that donate button and help keep KRFY providing unique quality radio in North Idaho. Thanks for your support. We now return to the show. From 1977, that's Andy Gibb. Number one on this date in 77, I Just Want to Be Your Everything. That's written actually by his brother, Barry Gibb. And they were in a little group called the Bee Gees. Well, you are listening to the KRFY Morning Show. My thanks to Keith Lee Morris for joining me this morning, which was actually late last night, to talk about his upcoming, actually no longer upcoming, now released, now available novel, Traveler's Rest. And he will be here in Sandpoint at the Burned Barrel on January 15th to do a reading and a little Q&A and meet the folks back home. Hey, it's wintertime here in Sandpoint. Let's talk about some upcoming events coming up this weekend and next week. First of all, the highlighted event on my entertainment calendar for this weekend is that it is National Trails Day. Celebrating it up at Schweitzer Mountain Resort is your option and your prerogative. On January 9th, that's Saturday, January 9th, there will be a chance to enjoy free access to Schweitzer's snowshoe and Nordic ski trails. That's right, free access this Saturday. In addition, multiple hosted snowshoe hikes going on throughout the day. You can contact the Activity Center up there to learn more or to reserve a spot. 255-3081 is your number there. You can also check out the free Learn to Cross Country Ski event happening the same day at the Schweitzer Roundabout, hosted by the Sandpoint Nordic Club and Schweitzer. Demos and lessons, free rentals, and more. Plus, there's a new third session this year for teens only. All right. Contact Schweitzer Ski and Ride Center for rentals if you want to reserve equipment at 255-3070 or lessons at schweitzer.com. Also, January, by the way, is Learn to Ski and Snowboard Month, according to Schweitzer Mountain Resort. Reduced lift tickets, rentals, and group lessons. Go to schweitzer.com to learn more about that. It's Thursday, January 7th right now. Going on tonight at Monarch Mountain, Scott Reed is hosting the Monarch Open Mic, which is, of course, on the first and third Thursday of every month, going into its umpteenth year now, and continuing in 2016. 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at Monarch Mountain Coffee. That's at 208 North 4th Avenue tonight. Also going on tonight and continuing tomorrow, there's a movie called Thebe at the Panada Theater. It's an Arab film. Thebe is T-H-E-E-B, and it's probably pronounced that way. The Panada Theater is in the middle of the street on 1st Avenue in downtown Sandpoint, and the time is 7:30 p.m. each night. Part of this Panada's Global Cinema Cafe series, the movie is set in the Ottoman province of Hejaz during World War I, where a young Bedouin boy experiences a greatly hastened coming of age as he embarks on a perilous desert journey to guide a British officer to his secret destination. More information at panada.org or 225-7881. Sounds a little bit like Lawrence of Arabia, but from the opposite perspective. Going on Friday, that's tomorrow, there is an Art for Human Rights exhibit hosted by the Bonner County Human Rights Task Force. It's at the POAC Gallery, that is the Pondere Arts Council Gallery, next to the Panada Theater from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Features the work of Bonner County students inspired by the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. The exhibit continues through January 28th and may be viewed during regular POAC Gallery hours, but the big opening reception is tomorrow from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Call 263-6139 if you want a little more information about that. Also going on tomorrow, Friday, January 8th, at the Idaho Poor Authority, there will be live music from 5 to 7 p.m. And at the Sandpoint Community Hall, it is time for the Contra Dance. That's right. It's partners, Sandpoint Parks and Recreation, partnering with Emily Faulkner and Lost Horse Press to offer this Contra Dance from 7 p.m. until 10 p.m. at Sandpoint Community Hall. Contra Dancing is community dancing for all ages in the New England tradition, featuring live music with local and regional bands and lively callers. Held on the second Friday of each month, the second Friday of each month, that's tomorrow, is the second Friday of January. Call 263-3613 for more information about that. Again, it's at Sandpoint Community Hall tomorrow night from 7 p.m. until 10 p.m. And someday I'm going to work up the courage to go down there and participate in that. But I kind of got two left feet. It's going to take some work. Ongoing through January 29th, starting on Friday, Schweitzer Mountain Resort is hosting Friday night races on NASTAR, NASTAR, sponsored by the Independent Race League. It's a junior race series. Call 255-3081 for more information about that, because I haven't got much more. We already talked a little bit about Winter Trails Day and Learn to Cross Country Ski Day. That's going on Saturday. Also going on Saturday, our neighbors down the hall, the Friends of Scotchman Peaks Wilderness, are hosting a moderate hike with great views of Lightning Creek, likely about 6 to 7 miles round trip. It is a hike up Regal / Lightning Creek. Steady incline for the first 3 miles, then a moderate grade. Bring snowshoes. FSPW has some to lend if needed. I got to use my weather reporter voice there a little bit. Space is limited, so sign up. If you don't mind, you better sign up. Contact the Friends of Scotchman Peaks for more information. On their website, there's also a full winter 2016 hiking schedule. It's scotchmanpeaks.org. Also going on the 9th, Saturday the 9th, weather permitting. Oh, no, wait. It's rain or shine. There will be a cornhole tournament at McDuff's Beer Hall. Indoors if rain, outdoors if shine. Registration starts at noon and the first toss is at 1 p.m. Again, that's at McDuff's Beer Hall at 220 Cedar Street. Call 209-6700 if you want to know more about that. Brian Jacobs is playing later that night at McDuff's Beer Hall. 6:30 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. Actually, he plays the second Saturday of every month, and I'd like to get a CD if it's possible. But that is at McDuff's Beer Hall, 6:30 to 9 on Saturday. Now, here's the one. Here's the big one. On Saturday, New Jack City, that's NU Jack City, not the movie, but the band. There is a concert at 8 o'clock p.m. at the Panada Theater on First Avenue. It's the Inland Northwest's number one Americana dance and party band, New Jack City. Sounds of Motown, blues, R&B, soul, a little bit of rock, and country hits. Max Daniels and Moni Ham love to entertain the crowd. They're leading the band. And the Panada does ensure a memorable experience. Sponsored by Over the Edge Productions Northwest and the Panada Theater. Take information at panada.org or 255-7801. Again, that's New Jack City at the Panada Theater, 300 North First Avenue, Saturday night, 8 p.m. Finally, listen up. Who likes video games? There is a Super Smash Brothers tournament at Evans Brothers Coffee Roasters on Sunday, January 10th. 524 Church Street is where Evans Brothers Coffee is, if you're not familiar. There is a tournament for all ages and skill levels. Sign-ups begin at 3:30 p.m. on Sunday. Super Smash Brothers for Wii U singles begins at 4 p.m. Smash Brothers for Wii U Doubles at 5:45 p.m. and Super Smash Brothers Melee at 6 p.m. You can find information at the North Idaho Smash Brothers community on Facebook for more details about that, or call 946-8468. And that's about it for upcoming events this weekend. But let's turn back time here a little bit. It was actually, I'm not going to do a This Day in Music exactly, but I will tell you whose birthday it is. Get ready. It is Kenny Loggins' birthday. That's right. Kenny Loggins, born on this date in 1948. Old Footloose Kenny. Old Loggins and Messina Kenny. It is his birthday today. How about we hear one of his best? This is Heart to Heart, and you're listening to 88.5 KRFY, Panhandle Community Radio. Happy birthday, Kenny Loggins, and thanks to my guest this morning, calling in the wee small hours, as it turned out, calling in last night and into this morning, Keith Lee Morris, a tremendous author who just came out with a brand new novel set here in North Idaho in the winter. If you're looking for one to sink your teeth into at this time of year, now that the holidays are over, check out Traveler's Rest by Keith Lee Morris. And you can see him at the Burned Barrel on January 15th. One more musical birthday. It's Paul Revere. No, not that Paul Revere. This Paul Revere. You've been listening to The Morning Show on 88.5 KRFY. Stay tuned for Bird Note and then Auto's Eclectic Mix all day long.